This is Jessica Benson from the American Egg Network. I just want to thank everyone that's been listening to my new podcast, Agriculture. Again, it's kind of been a little bit of a dream of mine, and I'm just happy to be doing it. And I hope that everyone's learning something or picking up something new from it, whether you're a producer or a consumer. Or maybe we're just confirming some ideas or notions that you have about farming and ranching. So again, thank you very much for listening and supporting. And yeah, just hit me up if there's anything that you want to hear personally, like topics or specific aspects of the cattle or crop industries. I'd be happy to find the resources and the people to talk to get your questions answered. Thank you again. This is Jessica Benson with the American Ag Network. You're listening to Agriculture Episode 3.
I'm Jessica Benson with the American Ag Network here out of Fargo, North Dakota, and it's been 40 degrees, so it's almost swimsuit weather. Today, my guest is Kevin Escobar from Florida. It's probably a little warmer there. A little bit warmer. Yeah. But Kevin is a dedicated cattleman and advocate for the beef industry. He is from Florida, as I mentioned, where he runs cattle with his family, his wife and his daughter. And he's very active in telling the story of modern ranchers. I virtually met Kevin through... amongst a lot of other wonderful people, through North Dakota University's extension program. They had these webinars titled The Intersection of the Beef and Cattle Industries. And I highly recommend you go watch those if you have a genuine interest in the process of how cattle turn into beef and how the packing industry operates. My plan is to, when I have this posted, have some links in the bottom that you can click on to go check those out. It's chock full of great information, and there are countless experts and cattle producers on there as well. So definitely worth checking out. And but let's shift gears here a little bit and get into the My Sustainable Beef story. So, Kevin, as we all know, agriculture, especially animal agriculture, is constantly vilified, whether it's in Washington, in politics, or in the mainstream media. It's like I always say, there's only 2% of us. So it's a pretty small number to be fighting this battle constantly. Yeah. And just with that, I want to give a little background or some history. You know, especially from the consumer end, they might not understand why animal agriculture is vilified so often. And a lot of it stems from this scientific paper that was published in 2006 by the I'm going to find that name again. But it was a scientific paper published in the United Nations called Livestock's Long Shadow. You can go look it up, you can read through it if you'd like. But this paper really, it made animal agriculture out to be horrible. Like it's like destroying the world. And as you and I know, that's actually not the case. But what happened was 4 years later, this paper was actually debunked. It was debunked by Frank Mitlohner. He's a scientist out of UC Davis, and he still currently works studying climate change when it comes to livestock production. He's a genius, and it would be amazing if he would come on here and talk to me someday about his work, because it's incredible and he's doing great things. But Frank debunked this paper. And so what happened was, I'm gonna give just another little lesson. So what happened was when you're producing a product, you want to do what is called a material flow analysis. So a material flow analysis is an examination of the material input and output data to determine the use and emissions of materials within and between different stages of production, use, and disposal. Examples of inputs would be chemicals, water, and electricity. Examples of outputs would be the product itself or the inputs plus value added and the waste. When we consider the production, use, and disposal of a product, this is called a life cycle assessment. So just in a nutshell, what happened was they took animal agriculture and they considered every aspect of it. So from birth to death and transportation and feed, they factored all of that into animal production, animal livestock production. But when it came to things like electricity or transportation, they only used the end product. They didn't factor in any of the life cycle assessment. So there was a substantial amount of data left out of that. And so therefore that made livestock production look really bad. And it was bad science and it got debunked. But that paper, that the bell got rung, and people still run with that faulty information today. And animal agriculture is still living under that cloud, and we can't seem to shake it. Even though there's substantial science to say that, if anything, we have constantly been improving over the years. So with my little history lesson, just so, because I just want everyone to know why we're talking about it and kind of where this all stems from. But so let's talk about my sustainable beef story. This is my segue into that. So I'm curious how this got started, what really inspired you guys to create, like actually take the step in creating this and creating it into a movement.
Well, you know, I think it's something that has been growing for a while in a lot of people's minds. I can speak for myself, obviously, that this has been something that as we continue to hear the negatives and the buzzwords of climate change and so forth and how it's connected with, you know, the cattle industry specifically, but all agriculture, you know, it's so disappointing to hear these negative connotations when it is part of our life cycle. You know, you want to talk about the life cycle of that report, and agriculture is a part of our life cycle and what we have to sustain. And for me, my sustainable beef story became a reaction to the report that was put out a couple weeks ago that strongly suggested that all wealthy nations be on 100% sustainable proteins. And I said, you know what? First of all, the word sustainable has been hijacked in a number of different ways by different organizations, and what truly means, what does sustainable truly mean? So I put out a little post on my own Facebook page kind of just said a little bit about, you know, what I do with cattle, how it's sustainable, and just a few sentences with some pictures and so forth. And then it really started, and it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction, if you will. And I hashtagged my sustainable beef story. Why I came up with that, I don't really know. It just came up, and so I started thinking, you know what? This is not the producers got to get on board with this, and we need to get all producers. It's not about me at all. It's about the producers, and so I started asking other people that are producers that I know, hey, would you mind going and put a post out, tell your story, what makes you a sustainable operation, and just put my hashtag my sustainable beef story. And so that's how it kind of evolved or started, and it's evolved from there. We have I started a page, but then we evolved it to a group page because ultimately I really wanted other people to participate. I'm not a tech guy, and so I didn't really realize what I was doing in terms of trying to create this page. And so it was a little bit of an evolution going from a single page that I was the only one posting on to trying to open it up for other producers to post on as well. So now we do have a group page that I want to strongly encourage everybody, producers or not, to go to my Sustainable Beef Story Facebook page. And there's great information that keeps getting posted and shared by various different sources. But I want to encourage all of you producers to put your own story out on your own social media pages, and you can share it on that group page as well. We need to really get the message out. We need to be the front runners in telling our story and stop letting everybody else tell our story. So that was the whole premise behind it, the whole purpose behind it. And I just want to encourage all producers to get out there and start telling their story and use my sustainable beef story, because this is what makes us sustainable.
Absolutely. And people have written books about this. There's a communication gap between producers and consumers, especially nowadays, because there's not many people living on the farm or the ranch anymore. They go to the grocery store, they get what they need, and that's the life they know. And that's fine, and that's the luxury of living in a first world country. Having the food choices that we have, that is privilege. That is the definition of privilege, is food choice. And so, I love this movement. Of course you would come up with it, Kevin. Genius.
No, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I'm just blessed to have the idea. That's all.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. And so let's talk about the eco benefits of cattle producers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I can speak. I'm in Florida. I can talk about, a lot of the stuff that is going on here in Florida. But there are green benefits, eco benefits across the nation with all beef and cattle producers, specifically cattle producers. So this is not exclusive to Florida, but it's what I know, so it's what I'm sharing. But I just want to go out there or say that first, because I'm not trying to make it sound like Florida's the only one that's doing this. But the eco benefits are anywhere from water storage, nutrient capture, clean air, wildlife habitat. It just boggles my mind how there are so many people that are they'll take on the argument that we got to protect this species, that species, we got to protect the environment, we got to protect land, water is a scarce resource, and we got to protect this. But then all of a sudden they buy into the vilification of the cattle industry and producers. And they run hand in hand at this point, as our growing commodities of concrete and steel in this industry, and in Florida in particular, I'm talking about the cattle producers and the cattle industry is what is protecting those natural resources and keeping those vast open areas for people to see, more than just shopping malls and highways and subdivisions. So it is, I believe it's paramount for the cattle industry if you want to keep a natural preserve. We see species, 50 plus endangered species here in Florida that are preserved and taken care of because of the ranch lands and management that's done with pasture management and so forth. Sandhill cranes, gopher tortoises in Florida. Gopher tortoise is something that's been around for hundreds of years, but with all the construction and development going on, they're getting pushed out, and they're finding homes in the ranch lands. There's ground owls. There's all different types of native vegetation that you don't find anywhere else that was native to Florida, but we have pushed it out through all the development that we've done. But we talk about the steps that are being taken. There's a number of different ranches and organizations in the state of Florida, but there's two ranches that I have a high admiration for, in Buck Island Ranch and Blackbeard's Ranch, that the management of those ranches, they have taken it on at their own mission to prove the sustainability of land and cattle in conjunction with each other. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Archibald, but it's a scientific research center that has actually partnered with Buck Island Ranch, and the combination of being able to work together, the science and numbers is proving how sustainable cattle raising really is. I can tell you that when you talk about water, there is about 30 billion gallons of water per year that are filtered through the ground into aquifers rather than run off into streams and so forth and contaminants just because of ranch lands here in Florida. And the development that's going on here in the state of Florida is really disappointing in a lot of ways. Sure, you're always going to see growth, but there's numbers I've heard anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200 people a day are moving into the state of Florida. And we are on a fast track right now with 21 million people. We're the highest population in the Southeast, in the state of Florida. And that number continues to rise and grow. And the vast open natural resources that we have in the state of Florida, we're losing because of that development. The ranch lands, the producers, the cattle producers are the ones who are working to save those lands and keep those lands open. And it's a real fight, you know, here in Florida. It really is. And like I said, there's a number of different ranches. Our past Florida Cattlemen Association president, Matt Pierce, has done a phenomenal job fighting to find ways to make our water rights and water protection in the state of Florida, as well as Jim Strickland, Mr. Jim Strickland. These guys are right there at the forefront of the fight, and it's really inspiring to see what they do.
Yeah, it's very, it's odd to me that we have to fight so hard to prove ourselves to a world that we're just trying to feed and mm-hmm. take care of. Mm-hmm. But the silver lining in that is that we are being cornered to prove ourselves, and we have presented numbers and the science to prove why livestock production, cattle production specifically, is good and it's necessary and we need it. Mm-hmm. And, I just like on the emotional side of it, I love what my family does. I mean, growing up, I would cuss as the day is long about it. But now, you know, it comes full circle, and I've learned to appreciate how I grew up, and I wouldn't trade it mm-hmm. for the world. And I only wish more people had the experience of growing up that way, so then that they might have a better understanding. But mm-hmm. like you said, the world is changing, it's developing, it's growing, and technology is taking over, and that's, you know, it is what it is, and that's what we have to work with. So yeah. On the topic of technology, let's talk about health benefits mm-hmm. of lab-grown meat. Is there any? Are you an expert in lab-grown meat? Have you read up on this stuff?
Well, I definitely would not say I'm an expert. I think that it is too new for anyone to really know what are the true side effects of this, you know, lab-grown product. So I don't know if anybody is really an expert on it yet, to be quite frank. But I can tell you that, you know, using the nutritional information that's put out by some of these large companies, that, you know, they have all kinds of chemicals that they're putting into it, the preservatives alone, and the sodium levels are very, very high. All those things are why, for, you know, years they said why red meat was bad for you, but they never talked about why, you know, all the vitamins and minerals that red meat provides for you. And so when we talk about, you know, is lab-grown meat, you know, healthy for you? I don't know that it is, but their own nutritional labels show you what they're putting in it. And I can tell you, what I can tell you is why beef is good for you. And It is a product. It is arguably the most sustainable protein source, meat protein source out there that we can produce. The benefits that the cattle production is putting into the into society, into family ranching, into the work ethic. The list goes on and on about all the reasons why cattle production is good, but people only want to talk about, you know, the social aspects of it. And so you can, we already talked about some of the ecological things. We didn't even get into the carbon factor, you know. Carbon factor, you know, people want to talk about the methane gas and so forth that, you know, cattle, you know, are putting off. However, what they're not measuring is, you know, carbon intake. And as cattle graze grass and they stir up the vegetation, they cause it to grow. As it's growing, it pulls more carbon into the ground to feed its roots. Grass that has gone dormant actually puts carbon off. So having cattle roaming and grazing and stressing to a certain extent with proper pasture management, those vegetation, it actually pulls in carbon that in many cases, I would even go to as far as to say that cattle producers on the most part are probably going to be closer to carbon neutral, if not carbon negative in reality. But nobody wants to talk about that. So getting back on track, you know, all the things that beef is healthy about, that's what beef is healthy about. And it's, you know, if you compared an equal portion of ground beef to an equal portion of whatever major brand you want to use of the lab-grown meat stuff, you'll find that per ounce, your protein is higher, your sodium levels are lower substantially. There's one particular company that comes to mind that if you just look at you know per gram, 75 milligrams of sodium in 80/20 ground beef versus 450 milligrams of sodium for that particular company's lab-grown meat, and that's an ounce. So that's why I say that. No, I'm not an expert by any means, but we can read the labels and we can see exactly what the labels say. And I don't think that the lab-grown meats are healthy for you.
Right. And as a bit of a fitness buff myself, you generally want to eat foods that have one ingredient. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Yeah. But and you know, as far as protein goes, I'm actually doing an episode next week with a meat scientist, Dr. Eric Berg, and he's going to talk about proteins. Not all protein is the same. It's about the bioavailability of the protein itself. So plant-based proteins, it's a little bit hairier. And I'm not going to get too much into that because I don't know a whole lot. But I know that the animal protein is just it's just a much more efficient product. It's one ingredient. It's better for you, and I think it's gonna be tough to argue otherwise ever. But
yeah.
Did you want to talk more about lab grown, or do you want to talk about truth in labeling?
We can talk about whatever you'd like.
Let's move on to truth in labeling. I have a coworker, and he said one morning he had friends over and he was making breakfast, and he ran to the grocery store and he grabbed some sausage and he paid for it and he went home and he went to open it and it was not sausage. It was some sort of plant concoction that was made to look like sausage, and he was very upset and he did not cook it, and I think he might have just thrown it away. So let's talk about truth in labeling. Let's talk about, you know, a lot of guys say, like, stand on your own merits, stand on what you are as a product. Yeah. Don't try to use the name of actual meat to stand on, because this fake meat, it's not meat, first of all.
Yes.
And it's also just strange to me that you'd want to create a product that's like meat and also looks like meat. There's beet juice in like ground beef and stuff. That's just strange to me, because I would think you're not eating meat because you're trying to avoid the appearance, what it stands for, and I think it's an odd thing to me. So yeah, truth in labeling. Where do you want to go with that, Kevin?
Well, you know, whitewashing and brainwashing is a real thing, and you know, where do I want to go with it? I think the only place to go is to say simply that, you know, we need as producers to get together and fight together to make sure that, again, we are telling our own story, that we're not getting hijacked. This is a perfect example of our industry being hijacked by other sources. We're talking about just producers in general. I'll take it outside of you know, the beef and cattle factor, a meat factor, if you will, and milk. You know, you talk about almond milk, okay? Well, should that be called milk, okay? There's a number of products out there today that are labeled that is not truthful. And that's what I think we really need to talk about, being really blunt in many ways. What is the truth in the label? And if we're talking about what is meat, what is milk, I think as, again, producers, we got to get together, we got to fight together to make sure that products, we have legislation that's put together to make sure that products are labeled correctly. That's the only way that we're going to be able to, again, take control of our own destiny and make sure that we don't continue to be hijacked. And that's where the truth in labeling comes into play. It's got to be done through the proper channels, because we aren't big enough on our own, but we do have to fight this battle together.
Absolutely. And, you know, back again on the sustainability topic, when it comes to almond milk specifically, I'm kind of going off here, but almond production, that it's tough. It's tough. It's tough on the land. Takes a lot of resources, a lot of resources. And so again, we go back to cattle. They're upcyclers. So they are taking products that are inedible by humans and creating that into something that is, again, one ingredient, healthy. It's taking a product that would be otherwise useless and turning it into something that is extremely useful, nutritious. I mean, it could go on and on. So it's just important, you know, to you consumers out there. I mean, you can drink almond milk and think that you're saving the cows, but what other nature is getting displaced because of the almond production? That's you have to think about that with crop production as well. You can eat vegetables all day long, but those vegetables have to grow in a field, and some sort of nature and habitat has to be displaced because of it. So there's, in my little humble opinion, I don't think that being a vegan or a vegetarian is you can't be truly one unless you grow everything yourself. Even then you're displacing animals. It's this fantasy idea of this perfect world that we could live in, and it'll never exist. So, there's a life cycle. There's life and death, and that's how it works. And things have to die for other things to live.
Yeah.
And so it's just important to remember that reality. So just eating vegetables isn't necessarily saving animals or preventing death.
Yeah.
So with, you know, I like to make those points every now and then, because it's like we forget about just the natural life cycle.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, let's elaborate there then real quickly. And for anyone who's listening that doesn't know, people think that, you know, cattle are taking in resources that, you know, humans could be, you know, eating. The fact of the matter is that of everything that a bovine can take in its diet from birth to harvest, whether it's out on open pasture, whether it's in a conditioning backgrounder feedlot, wherever it is, what cattle eat, 86% of it humans cannot consume. And this is one of the things that I find so fascinating about ruminant animals and the way God made them, is there's so much protein in vegetation that has high amounts of sugar when you have the right amount of breakdown, but our bodies can't produce it. So we've got another food source that is able to take grass and turn into fat. How incredible is that? And 86% of what cattle are eating, we cannot take in any shape or form and benefit from. So that in itself is a sustainable answer right there, a story of sustainability in itself right there.
Exactly. And a lot of grazing land, you wouldn't be able to, you know, cultivate or plant anything on, because it's not suitable for crop production. So that's another thing that we need to remember too, is they take land and make it into something amazing with their four stomachs. Mm-hmm. Ruminants are amazing.
They are.
Yes. So yes. So so who is it, just you behind this movement? I see you're working with Leah Biondo as well. She's your tech gal.
Yes. Yeah. So she is the reason why this was made into a group. And I could not have done it without her. So thank you so much. But the whole, from the original idea I had, it never was about me. This is not about me. I really want it to be about the producers. I want producers to get behind this. But I just didn't have the tech savvy there. And she was more than willing to offer her assistance and made it, made it possible. So yeah. So, Leah and I have worked together to, I guess the words administrate the page, but there's not a whole lot of administration that needs to be going on. This is a page for you producers, for us producers, to get out there and to share our own stories. So you guys get out there and post your stories. Like I said, I want to encourage everyone to post on their own pages. Feel free to the group page and be a part of that and come to this community as well. But in order for it to really speak to the community, I don't think we just want to scratch each other's backs. We want to get this story about why beef is sustainable out to the public. So in order for that to happen, it's got to be a viral thing, and all producers need to jump on board and start posting their stories so that everybody sees it.
Absolutely. And so you're familiar with cattle ranchers. I mean, a lot of us farmers and ranchers don't want to sit on Facebook and Instagram and be tweeting all day. But so how do we get through to our fellow ranchers and get them to take part in this? How do we motivate them to understand the importance of social media and putting our story out there? It doesn't have to be fancy or in depth or absolutely riveting. It's just, I think you plant the seed in people's minds, whether it be on whatever platform you want to use. And I think the average American will listen. There's yeah. always your extremes, but I think yeah. The middle America, they will listen. So how do we get ranchers to just do this, to just give in and accept that we live in a world of social media and take part?
Yeah. I don't know, because honestly, I'm not a tech savvy person myself. So, I don't want to sound hypocritical here by any means, but, times change and I'm sure, there are older cattlemen out there that never would have thought that somebody would be sitting in their pasture with a computer, on their hip or in their truck and taking down, data or uploading data and things like that. Things change. And, I'm reminded of a story that I've heard from the current Florida Cattlemen Association president, Mr. Gene Lawless. I've heard him tell a story when he first came to Buck Island Ranch. There's a older gentleman that said, "So you're the young guy who's here to ruin the cattle industry in Florida." And he was referring to Mr. Gene Lawless has been one of the leading cattle producers behind bringing data, science, and numbers to prove the sustainability of beef and so of cattle and so forth. But his response was that if we don't get the data and the numbers to back up what we're already doing, we're already dead. And so I'm reminded of that story, and to bring it back into full circle, I'm thinking that if we don't use and utilize the tools and resources that are already being used against us for our own benefit and to speak for ourselves, to get our own message out there, then we're already dead. And so we've got to get behind the mass social network in order to tell our story, if that makes any sense. I mean, that's just kind of speaking off the cuff. So.
Absolutely. This is where I would sum that up as evolve or die. That's kind of been my life motto the last year or so. Evolve or die. You either accept the change and use it, like you said, for your advantage, or you kind of fade out and someone else is going to take over. So, and a lot of guys will say that a lot of aspects of we're in a position in agriculture where people are going to end up just telling us what to do instead of us having a say. And that's true and it's scary. And so it's something that we need to consider when we're trying to make change and tell our story. And it's great that we have the science and the numbers to back us up now. It's just that we need to get people to listen. We need consumers to listen. My friends and my peers probably think I'm like this crazy cow lady and they don't really listen to what I have to say. So that's why I had to make this podcast and have smart people come on here and repeat what I say so that they know I know what I'm talking about. But this is good stuff. And I hope people are taking something away from this because this is my sustainable beef story. That's huge. I think it's an amazing movement. It's a great idea. And I'm going to push it. But there's one thing. If you could tell the average consumer of the world one thing about beef production, what would you say?
That's a great question. If there's only one thing to say, it has to come back around to the sustainability side of things. And if you don't want to just be looking at concrete subdivisions and highways, appreciate the local producers, appreciate the cattle producers, appreciate what they're doing to keep natural resources alive. I don't think they really realize because they think, well, beef comes from the grocery store. That's where beef comes from. And again, that's why taking the fight on ourselves instead of relying on somebody else to fight for us is why it's so important. Because the perception that people have is based off of the stories that other people have been telling about us. I think that it would have to be, that you have to see the sustainability of what we're providing for natural resources. And just appreciating that,
Yeah.
I want to say a lot of things, but you're telling me say one thing, so.
I know. I made it tough on you.
Yeah.
But I guess my thing, too, is when it comes to, how I grew up, cow-calf operation, a lot of people like to say Americans have no culture. We're not cultured people. We have Instagram and TikTok, and yeah, we just don't have our own culture, I guess. And I, to that, I would say, no, we have cowboys. What other country has cowboys? Other countries have cowboys because America has cowboys and they want to be like them. So that is the legacy of America to me. The U.S. is our cowboy ranching culture, because you don't get that anywhere else.
Yeah.
People raise cattle elsewhere, but there's something romantic about cattle ranching and cowboys and cowgirls and just the life that we lead. Living it isn't exactly truly romantic, but to the outsider, it definitely is. And you can kind of see, I think, with like how there's TV shows about cowboys. There's like one coming out, a new one coming out. There's been like The Last American Cowboy. There's Yellowstone. I mean, people are watching. I mean, I know that these aren't exactly educational things for entertainment value, but people are still watching it, and people are creating it because people are watching it. Yeah. So I think we're not dead yet, and we're not gonna die. It's just we just have to keep fighting, I think.
Yeah.
We'll be all right. And I can't see a world where we don't eat ribeyes. I'm sorry, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, America definitely has a love affair with the cowboy, and being from Florida, I'll also have to go out there and say that, you know, this is the 500th year of Florida raising cattle, starting with Ponce de Leon bringing the first cattle and the first horse to America. It started right here in Florida. So everyone kind of thinks of the cowboy movement that was really for a very short period of time in the late 1800s that was out west. And not to take anything away from anybody out there, but it started right here in Florida.
And that is something to hang your hat on, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I'll touch on. You said you don't ever see a period of time where somebody's not going to eat a ribeye, but we do have to be realistic, and we have to keep our eyes open, and with large players and people that can really throw around a lot of weight, saying things like, you know, wealthy countries need to be on 100% synthetic, you know, meat, and with all the millions of dollars that's being invested in lab-grown products and stuff, you can see where they want to take this. And in reality, where they want to take it is without us. So the only way that, in your words, we don't see a time without a ribeye is going to be if we fight. If we take the fight on ourselves and stop relying on somebody else to fight for us. We all have to, and I don't care. At this point, it's not about a state or a national association. We can all fight each other, regardless of what association we're a part of, and let these people, while we're bickering with each other, let these other industries do what they want to do. Well, we can get together and we can fight together. If all cattle producers were to get together on the same page and fight together, we're a force to be reckoned with. And I think that we would be taken a lot more seriously. And I don't think that there would be a lot of the negative connotation, whether it's climate or anything else that has gone along with the cattle industry, would even be a talking point if we'd all fight together.
Absolutely. And that's a whole nother topic. I mean, within our cattle industry right now, it seemed very polarized about 8 months ago. Is it still very polarized at the moment? I mean, when you talk about us differing associations and differing opinions, are cattle producers still very polarized like they were about 8 months ago when we had to deal with, well, we're still dealing with, you know, the packing plants and those issues? And so what are you seeing? Are we coming together, or are we still just at each other's throats?
Well, I think a lot of times it has to do with like certain regions that you're in. I'm talking about as a nation, you know, across the nation, all cattle producers got to get together in order to fight together for our families, for our livelihoods, for generations. I'll tell you where I come from real quickly. I'm a very small guy. I'm a very small producer, and don't mean to make myself look any bigger or more important than what I really am. I'm a first generation cattle producer in the United States. My great grandfather, my dad's from Cuba, and my great grandfather started a ranch in Cuba, and it was very small, and it was in the late 1800s. My grandfather ended up taking it over and grew it to a 5,000 acre ranch. He was very innovative, had some really creative ideas that allowed them to be able to grow, and he was the first person to contract with ranches in Texas to winter heifers in Cuba and then ship them back. So he did a lot of things that allowed him to be able to grow that ranch. And then Castro took over the country. And I can't make this story any more dramatic than what it really was. When I say this, this is exactly what happened. And there's countless stories that are very similar to this that I've heard other people say too. But my dad remembers being a little boy, and two guys rolled up in a military Jeep one day, and they knock on the front door. They said, "Just so you know, you can live here, but you don't own anything anymore." And just like that, the entire family ranch was gone. So why am I telling this story? I'm telling this story because for those of you out there that have been 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th generation ranchers, don't think that it can't come to an end. And if you want to see your future generations be able to carry on this legacy and be able to carry on the history of your family's cattle production, you got to fight today.
Yep.
Or you're going to lose in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's a good note to end on, because this is what this is about. It's about fighting for the industry and educating consumers along the way to get them on our side, get them on our team. And it's about pushing our message. We are sustainable. We are necessary. America needs us. The world needs us. Yes, yes. So again, Kevin, where can everyone find My Sustainable Beef Story? Is it only on Facebook, or does it have an Instagram? You have a Twitter? Are you working on this stuff? Is Leo working on this stuff?
Well, I'll tell you what. Right now, it's a Facebook group page. If there's anybody out there who would like to get in on the administrative side and make a Instagram page, Twitter page, feel free to get in contact with me, and we'll work together to do that. Like I said, I'm not a tech guy, so to grow those social media networks, we need more input and more assistance. But right now, Facebook page, My Sustainable Beef Story. And let's get out there and tell our individual stories. Let's get out there and post on our social media accounts and use that hashtag My Sustainable Beef Story. And the more we produce these stories, telling what our stories are, the more other people are going to share those stories as well. And we're going to start to see a groundswell and a growth across the nation of the sustainable stories of beef and the individual stories of the individual families. That's the other aspect of it that I really want to see. I want to see what this individual family out in North Dakota has been doing. I want to see what this individual family in Texas has been doing. This individual family in Minnesota has been doing to produce sustainable beef.
Absolutely. And that's another thing I like to always harp on, is over 90% of farms and ranches are family owned. Mm-hmm. So I know there's consumer concerns about factory farming, this term that's been coined. And I remember the first time I heard that term, factory farming, I had to call my mom and be like, "What is factory farming?" And I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, over 90% of farms and ranches are family owned. So that shouldn't be something that people should be concerned about. Now, farm and ranch size is increasing and numbers of farms and ranches are decreasing. Mm-hmm. And that comes down to efficiency, and that's a whole nother topic for another time. Yeah. But Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to me. I'm so happy that I met you through those webinars, and those were great. That made my summer with COVID and nothing going on. That was what I lived for what was it, 2 or 3 weeks? I'm not sure, but.
I think it was a couple of months. I mean,
maybe it was a couple. Yeah.
15 twice a week. So yeah, it went on, but no, yeah, it was definitely a great time. Very educational. Thanks to Dr. Ron Gill and Lisa Peterson and Jerry Yates for, you know, putting that on for us as well.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Again, I'm gonna plug that, and I'm gonna try and get the link posted when I get this posted to YouTube. But yeah, I think we touched on everything. This is good stuff. Thank you again. Next week's podcast is going to be with, again, Dr. Eric Berg. He's a meat scientist at NDSU, and we're going to talk about the standard American diet and meat in the diet. So that'll be, I'm looking forward to that one. He's a really smart guy. But again, I'm Jessica Benson here at the American Ag Network out of Fargo, North Dakota. Kevin, thank you again, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.